Welcome back, Liberata Podcast. Tim Bubar.
Dave Gruen.
And Aaron DeShazo.
Surprise.
Hey.
Hey, welcome back, Aaron.
Thanks.
Hey, this week we finished up the fifth week of a series called Easter Eggs. And not going to lie, I've had a great time in this series just because it's tying these little glimpses of the Old Testament with the New Testament. But I don't think that means everybody is, but I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And so here's the question from this past weekend. Are you a Batman guy or gal? Do you like Batman, the series? Is it anything you were ever interested in? Aaron?
Oh, well, I definitely have a lot of memories. My brother was super into Batman when we were young. And so I then therefore also wanted to be because he was an older brother. So yes, I've certainly seen every version I think they've released at this point.
Do you have a favorite Batman?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
Tim?
I certainly, without question, have a favorite Batman movie. No doubt about it. Batman Begins is my favorite Batman movie. Okay. I like origin stories. I like how practical that movie is. Like, he's figuring out how to be a superhero, you know?
Yeah.
Testing out machines. And you understand why he is
surrounded
the way he is.
By bats.
Yeah. I really like that one. But I would say I'm not really a Batman guy because whatever the movie was after that, The Dark Knight, maybe, at the next one?
That's
the last Batman movie I saw. I haven't seen one since.
Yeah.
I love all the Batman stuff and the idea of Batman and I'm not like a movie person in that I could tell you every line from a movie or the way that they came in a certain order. It all turns to mush in my mind in some way, shape, or form.
He says his big lines are, I'm Batman. Right. And yeah. Where's Rachel? Those
are his, pretty much sums it up.
Those
I did
are
like
his
the
lines.
Christian Bale Batman though. That was I did like that better. And there's certain other versions of Batman that weren't my favorite. That's what I'm gonna say. So I just hope we aren't losing people with the clips, but trying to keep it fun along the way. So with that, the idea though is being a hero who doesn't need the glory. That you really are selfless to a point where you can be the villain in somebody's story because you care more about the person and lifting them up. It's not a Jesus story. It's not a direct reflection.
Right.
But it's a heroic story that demonstrates humility. So that was the tie-in. Hmm. Hey, as we talk about this weekend, following Jesus leads to a humble life of loving and serving others. What's some ways maybe in the past that you've thought about humility, what it means to be truly humble, maybe the way God has shaped your view of humility over time? Has that morphed for you over time?
Yes. I think probably, Tim Keller quoting.
You love you some Keller.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Was, but that's okay.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Tim Keller quoting C.S. Lewis, I think probably at some point was when I had like a humility light bulb, you know, just in terms of like, oh, it's not, you know, I think Keller quoted C.S. Lewis a lot. And I think it was C.S. Lewis who said, it's not thinking of less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less.
Yeah.
And that was like, ooh, that stuck with me.
Yeah. Frequency. How much frequency with which? Yeah. That was huge for me too.
Yeah.
How about you, Aaron?
Yeah. I think just over time, maybe as I've even gotten to know people who I think seem to walk naturally in humility, maybe even more so than myself. Like I have like examples in my mind where I'm like, I don't think they're even trying to be humble. They have learned to live in such a way that this is normal for them. And that has helped maybe the more recent past shape how I view humility now, where it really isn't this like, let me really work hard so I can show how I'm being more humble, but where I'm watching people just do little things over time. And then I would describe them that way.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're trying to achieve that. They've just adopted
it. So what do you see? Because I think for a lot of times, like I'm like Tim, it was a big discovery when it was, it could have been Keller quoting C.S. Lewis, but it was C.S. Lewis in the sense of frequency. How often do I think about myself? But Darren, go a little bit further. Like, what are some of the things you see people doing that you would be like, they don't even know they're doing it? Like, what are you seeing people do that you're like, wow, that's humility. That's maybe a little bit different than the traditional mm-hmm. view.
All right. Let's see. I'll do my best with that. I think maybe some people that I can think of in my mind that I even look up to right now that I think are doing that well, where I see a dynamic leader I look up to that is leading for the sake of giving things away, empowering others to do, where they're fully capable and probably would be the best at it ultimately. But there's something where you're watching them and they're really focusing though on modeling to empower others, and then they step out of the way. Mm-hmm. That's something that for me has been very impactful, especially in my life more recently. Or someone who I think is naturally, yeah, thinking of others, like what I'm doing, how does that affect the people around me, and how do I consider them? How do I serve them, love them? Where it really isn't, it's not showy. I don't know how else to explain. They're just, they adopt this mentality, this way of life, that all their actions seem to be considerate of how does this encourage someone else around me, build them up, or glorify God. And I think maybe more recently right now, I've seen that in leaders I look up to, maybe even specific worship pastors, leaders that I'm watching do things or start movements that are all about not how they are really good at what they do and how they can teach us what they do, mm-hmm. but sharing their knowledge so that other people will actually rise up and take over for them. And mm-hmm. that has been powerful and challenging for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. And it's interesting that yours comes from observing people. And I go to what I heard a pastor say once. It just sort of speaks yeah. to our brains maybe yeah. and the way we, yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, that's yeah, yeah, people different, learn different ways, are impacted yeah. by different things.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was Keller. He did this great sermon years ago on the story of Esther. I mean, it was a series. It wasn't one sermon on it. But one of the messages is on humility. And it's called the man the king exalts or something like that. I don't know. But it was about humility. And it really stuck with me. And I can't remember if it was, again, Keller or him quoting C.S. Lewis, but the idea, as you talked, Dave, about like what specific things did you observe? He says, you know, you meet a truly humble person, you won't walk away thinking, that guy's really humble. You walk away thinking, oh, what an interesting person who asked really good questions. You know, mm-hmm. The humility isn't the thing. That's right. Kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Humility isn't the thing you notice. They just took an interest in you.
Yes.
And so you like talking to them because they give you a chance to talk about yourself yeah. and they're paying attention to you and taking an interest in you, and people, that feels good.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah. they're not trying to build a legacy around them.
Right.
But they are leaving a legacy yeah. that impacts other people.
Yeah,
that's something that's unique, I think, to certain people right now that I am, yeah, maybe even looking for as I'm looking for people that I want to be influenced by. I think that's something I'm looking for.
Leaving a legacy but not trying to build a legacy.
On yeah. you. Yeah. yeah.
That's good.
That is really good. Yeah, I think it's definitely something that I've morphed in time over. And it's just something that I think is often misunderstood in the sense of, and I'm known for saying it all the time, you know, if people are saying you're good at something, then simply agreeing with what is true is humility, agreeing with what is true. And so if we take and kind of mold, as we talked about this weekend, what the Old Testament says and the New Testament says, and we kind of mold a view of humility, it's this idea of living under the complete dependence upon God, where it involves seeing myself rightly and seeing others rightly and dependence upon God. When I live in that world, that's humility. And that's the humility Jesus demonstrates. And that's different than being self-deprecating mm-hmm. or, you know, I say it all the time, but, you know, the person who talks down about themselves is, they may have a very low self-worth. You could have an incredibly low self-worth and very low view of yourself. And that is the least humble you can be. it's actually pride. And that's a hard concept for us to get. It's pride filled to think I'm a terrible person and not see yourself as the image of God you were created to be. If you are in Christ, you are neither elevated nor devalued as an image bearer. And you have to recognize I have incredible worth as a human being because Jesus traded his life for mine. And so it seems like Easter is a perfect time to talk about humility. In particular, this weekend, the humble king out of Zechariah. Each week in this series, we've talked about an image of God that's been portrayed. And so started with the suffering servant, the idea of suffering. Yahweh as the one who the prophet pointed towards, Zechariah still. Yeah. And then we had, I'm going to lose the order here because I'm just riffing off the top of my mind. I'm missing the third one. And I go can't to remember the third Passover. One
And then the lamb.
I would say the
Passover lamb was the fourth one.
And this is the humble king, and I'm missing the one in the middle. Yeah. Hate when I do that. I'm 54. It's happening more frequently. All that to say, all of them are pointing towards this idea of death's defeat that we'll talk about in Easter. But it's interesting just the way the layers build. And in particular, this humble king that Zechariah talks about in Zechariah chapter 9.
Can I talk about the layers one more second?
Yeah, please do.
I know we didn't name them all. But it was the betrayal one that you did.
Oh yeah, the betrayed
pierced one.
Betrayed one. The pierced one was the
one, before. And then the betrayed king.
Yeah.
And it was the week I taught.
That's the one you can remember.
That's the one.
Betrayal.
Yeah. The thing that's been helpful for me is we're talking for 6 weeks in a row about the same topic, which is Easter. It's Jesus laying down his life, crucified for us, raised from the dead. For 6 weeks in a row. But scripture uses all these different images, like you just said, of who Jesus, what Jesus was doing. They use a different image for what he was doing in that. And looking at all of those that's been the surprise for me in this series, is I didn't really get, oh, how will it feel? Will we just be beating Easter, you know, I mean, beating it to death as we move towards Easter, but to look at different images and the way the images communicate different things, even sometimes things that might feel slightly contradictory, but scripture does that, uses those different images. It rounds out the picture of the cross and the resurrection. And I think that's been super helpful.
Yeah. It's interesting when it's, like you said, when there's things that seem like, well, is it this or that? How could it be both?
Right.
And the biblical authors don't seem to struggle with the categories that we struggle with sometimes. It's like, well, it can be all of those things.
Yeah.
It's difficult. But I would say this also, one of the things that we've talked about in this series is how these glimpses of Jesus, like they're there. Like Jesus has been hidden in plain sight all along. But I think really, like, I know this and I've known this, but through this series, I was reminded, and a lot of study for this series was reminded, it's only obvious looking back. It's only obvious. And I've grown in that, where a lot of people are like, oh, they should have known. And I was being that crowd, like, oh, they should have known, but they missed it. And now I'm like, Paul doesn't seem to think so. He calls it a mystery that was hidden for the ages, that was revealed at the proper time, and it's revealed to those who could handle it. And it seems like it needed to be, well, it's factually, it needed to be hidden because there were spiritual forces of darkness that wouldn't have put Jesus to death had they known. And now you're going, oh, well, they didn't know because you can only see it looking back. Uh-huh. And all of a sudden, looking back, you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So there's a TV show right now that we're watching streaming, and it has the same kind of thing. It's got some flashback stuff going on, and some of the flashbacks, they're going back and they're showing some foreshadowing that they did, but you could never have known the foreshadowing until you got to the episode later on when they went back in the story and they expanded that storyline. You would never have known.
Yeah.
It was just the character was there in this scene. that character existed in that scene, but there was nothing about them that you could have possibly drawn the link until you got to the later on.
Yeah, there's nothing that would even make you look for something. You're not even looking for something. Yeah.
No. And so I'm like, oh, that's a really good parallel to the Bible. Hmm. There's some things where you just couldn't have known. So with that, this week, as we jump in and coming up on Good Friday, which we want to talk about Good Friday in a second, Aaron, and in particular, I want to ask you some questions about that. But as we kind of look through this week, anything that you think, hey, you know what, this is the, we've been talking through this series about preparing for Easter. And as we head into this week, and there will be a Good Friday service that we want to make sure that you know about and invite you to on your campus. But is there anything that kind of stands out for you as you think about, okay, as we head from this weekend into next weekend, from Palm Sunday to Easter, as we look towards Easter, anything that you're like, hey, here's some thing that maybe I'm going to reflect on, or as you look at these questions and ideas, or anything that you're like, okay, this kind of stands out, something we could do?
Aaron, give a great answer.
Oh, gosh.
To put you on the spot.
Thanks, Tim. Oh, man.
I think it's... This is kind of the way I always think coming towards the week of Easter is our stream of Protestantism. It does not hold on very tightly to a church calendar, you know, a traditional church calendar. But I like that we get kind of and there's pros and cons, you know, lots of churches do things differently. But I enjoy that we have this week where typically we mark Palm Sunday, and because Palm Sunday is kind of marked, okay, we're 1 week out from Easter. It helps me at least look at that week differently. I was traveling in Central America, in Honduras once on Holy Week, and it really was obvious, like the whole week was about, this is a different week. This is a week set apart. And we don't operate that way, but it does help you that in a way that we don't other times of year go, okay, it's Palm Sunday. Now I'm thinking about there is a week between now and Easter, and that's the real time, how long there was for Jesus between Palm Sunday and Easter. It just helps you. It helps me enter the space a little bit day to day and think about, okay, a week. What was Jesus doing? He's in Jerusalem now. He's come in on Palm Sunday. Now he's in Jerusalem. What's happening? What do the Gospels say about it? The real-time nature of a week of Bible time and a week of my time is helpful to me.
Yeah. I think especially as you read through the Gospels, I mean, we've been taking people on Fridays through John's Gospel. As you go from chapter 12 to the end, that's the week.
Right.
And the other Gospel writers do the same thing. There's big chunks of the Gospel that are just accounting for the last week of Jesus' life. In fact, I think it was the first time I really ever landed on that was in 2018 when I had an opportunity to be on a trip to Israel where we were walking through that and with all the Gospels right next to each other, when you're reading through it in a chronological way, it just is like, whoa, like a big chunk of what the Gospel writers record happened in the last week of Jesus's life. And it's significant. And I think... I would say this. I'm not ripping on other faith traditions. Everything seems to go towards extremes. And so you mentioned the stream that we come out of. We can so minimize things, I think, in our stream, because we don't want to fall into patterns and religiosity, right? And so we can so de-emphasize some things. And there's other faith traditions that can so emphasize things that they lose their meaning. And so there's always this tension of how do we leverage the right understanding? And I think it's good. All through God's story, he's using holidays to remind his people who he is. And so he knows who we are, and we need rhythms and calendars and all those kinds of things to remember who he is and to celebrate who he is and in light of who he is, who we are. And so it's, I think it is good that we would come into a week like this and use it, leverage it in our lives to remind ourselves that Easter is a year-round reality. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have a particular day, weekend, where we are focused in, honed in on that truth, that the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus changed everything.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so I think it's, you know, how do we hold on to the best of that without falling into the trap of, hey, it's Easter, awesome. Okay, go live how you want, right? Along the way. So maybe along the way, some of the things you're going to talk about this weekend is how you define greatness and success. So in your mind, as you think about how, maybe we could just talk about the world in general and maybe even some generalities and then contrast that to the way Jesus holds on to them. As you grew up, like, what is it? How did you define greatness? How would you have defined even success in your world?
I can say, because I still even, this is still something I have to work through. I would say someone was great where they had the respect or clear gifting that others really admired them for. Like, it was clear that someone was really good at something and they had the respect of others around them. The way that they were spoken about by other people, that to me was like, that person is truly great.
How did that develop for you? Like, if you look back in your life and you're like, where would I have been like, okay, hey, that's how I would have thought that's success or that's being really great.
How did that develop?
This is psychotherapy, Aaron.
We're going deep. We're going deep right here. Let's go.
There were so many different versions of that too. It didn't look like one way. It was just, for me at least, like they're like, I'll use my mother as an example. My mother, who I would actually say is probably naturally like gifted in meekness, and she's not a center of attention person, but she has a clear gift that I can observe of discernment. She hears clearly from God and will articulate that. And so even with my father, I would notice over the years, he would really...
He's a really nice guy, by the way.
Dad, if you're listening.
Make sure he listens in.
He's a really nice guy. I would notice he would defer to her a lot in things. I like that he had this respect for this clear thing that she was good at. And other people would know that about her too. So even though she wasn't like the classic, like I'm up front and I'm a great speaker. She didn't like any of those things, but there was something she was really good at. And therefore she had the respect of people. They came to her to ask things or to get her wisdom, her insight. On the other side, then my dad was that upfront leader who was very gifted at speaking and people really followed his advice a lot. And both my parents were counselors, so there is that piece of that as well. But it was like indifferent. Does that make sense? It wasn't like it was one clear way. But in my view, it was people sought them for this thing. They had that respect that, it's something they were known for. And that to me looked like, well, they're great then.
Yeah. How about for you, Tim?
Thanks for going first, Aaron. That gave me a little time. It gave me a little time to think.
I wasn't going to call out that huge awkward silence I was swimming in for a while. They're going, I hope somebody answers sometime, please.
Yeah, somebody had to go first. We'll have Jesse cut that
awkward pause out later.
I don't know if greatness is. I don't know. You know, but I thought I came to a place at least by high school. That really firm, and then it carried on for years. The ultimate was if someone was good at something without looking like they tried really hard, if someone was cool without trying to be cool, that was the, like that ratio of effort to awesomeness was really what defined greatness to me. I don't really know why, but it was like, well, anybody can spend a bunch, like, okay, I think of like high school Tim. Oh, anybody can go spend a lot of money on clothes. Mm-hmm. But the person who doesn't and still is cool, that's cool, you know?
Yeah.
That was definitely a thing for me. Or the person who, like, you would think, like, oh, admire the person who tries really hard at, you know, mm-hmm. Rudy. I hadn't watched Rudy at that point in my life, maybe, but the person who tries really, really hard at their sport or their craft. And I said, no, I was like, maybe I respected that, but I respected even more the person who didn't even try and they were awesome at it. And I don't really know where that comes from. There were also good, you know, there were also healthier things. Like, I had a lot of good examples of, in my life, of people who were godly people and were really respected for it. Family members like mm-hmm. that. Both of my grandfathers, I only knew one of them personally, but they were both, I would describe, pretty humble, godly men who people were always telling me how great they were. Mm-hmm. And so that was a good, you know, I feel like that was a huge benefit to me that I had them in front of me. So I had some of that, but it's not like, so then I just knew humble godliness is the way to greatness. No, I still was like, that person is rich and has a big house.
Mm.
They're awesome. Mm. There was definitely some of that for me too.
I asked you guys a question. I really don't know. Yeah. I mean, as I think back at my life and go, why do I make decisions that I make along the way? You know, some of those things. It was like, well, I was just young and foolish and was like, I wasn't ready to give up playing football. And so I found a small college where I could keep playing football. You know, it was like, I didn't even know that. It was like, okay, well, I always had this dream and okay, well, hey, there's a guy who might allow me to get into a program where I could pursue that dream of military aviation. And I look back and I'm like, why did I make those decisions? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then this is true though. Once I made some decisions, and this is the common thread, why didn't I quit playing college football when I decided it was terrible and it was, you know, like, this might leave a lasting impact as you got a concussion or whatever. And it was like, because I told people I was playing. And then I started down the road towards, you know, becoming a pilot in the military. And it was like, why wouldn't I have quit when you get in that point? And it's like, this is terrible. It's because I told people I was doing it. And so it was fear of failure. For me, that really motivated along the way. So it's interesting where our motivations come from. But I never had in my life somebody that I was like, oh, if I could be successful like that person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so sometimes for me, it's hard for me to get my mind around how people viewed success. It's not something where I'm like, oh, I got to see this person and be like, okay, that's it right there.
Yeah.
And then I think once I started having a family, I just defined it as provision. Mm-hmm. Like, can I be a provider? Can I have a career that I can give my family all the stuff that they want? And so I am probably, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was the what I would consider the typical American in the sense of success was in being successful in pursuing a job that could make money in order that your family could have what they wanted.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that God came in and flipped upside down for me. So.
I wonder if there's people who are close to you or who were close to you growing up who could look at you and go, well, I know who you were, who you looked at and wanted to be like, because I can't do that for myself either. I'm like, no, I don't know. But like, I have a friend who I was real close with growing up, and I don't know if he knows it, but based on like what he did through college and his first years out of college, I'm like, I know who you looked up to and who you wanted to be like. Mm-hmm. It's obvious to me, but I have no idea if he knows it himself.
Maybe not.
Who knows? Maybe somebody knows.
Maybe somebody knows
who I wanted to be like when I grew up and can tell me.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe someday. So I just think sometimes it's interesting to think about like how our idea of success gets formed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then how has it changed?
Yeah.
And there was no doubt that one stands out in my mind.
Yeah.
Like I can go back in my mind not just to a season, but to a particular decision at a, I can't name the date and time, uh-huh. but I can go to the place. I can mm-hmm. tell you roughly when it happened. I can tell you it was a Saturday night because that's when we went to church back then. Mm-hmm. I know it was in a worship service, in a church service where there was a lightning rod moment. God had been changing me for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. Like it changing me. But it was in a moment that I know that success got redefined.
Oh, and, interesting.
And it was like, whoa. And I've said this before. I came face to face with the reality that I cared more what Jesus thought of me than anyone. Huh. And success became, mm-hmm. it wasn't totally healthy. I don't want to suggest that. But success became being completely sold out for Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn still over the 20 years since that happened, more than 20 years since that happened, how to hold that thing in tension, mm-hmm. because all of a sudden it can go slam in the other direction where now you have unrealistic expectations for other people of what it looks like to follow Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so, man, I've had to bring that back to the middle, no doubt about it. So have you guys, like, just as you think about humility, hey, what's God been teaching you in those areas? Humility, love, service. What's he been teaching you over the last, you know, span of however? What have you been learning?
One thing for me is humility isn't just how I perceive myself. Well, maybe perceive myself. It's certainly not just how I portray myself before others. Humility is also about how I prioritize things in my life. So I think it's relatively easy for me. I think it's just reality. I don't think most people look at me and go, Tim Bubar's kind of an arrogant person. I just don't think they do, right or wrong. I don't think I come across that way.
Tim, we've been meeting.
This is actually, please save it for after the podcast.
Yeah,
we can handle it.
Corner you here.
But that portrayal of myself has very little to do with, I'm not going to say it has nothing to do with real humility, but how I prioritize things in my life has a lot to do with humility. Like, do I want to make things work out for me? Do I want to keep things on my schedule, on my interest level? You know, like, I can view the world through the me lens, maybe without even people noticing it most of the time, unless they're really, really close to me, you know? Mm. And so it's just been, that's kind of what I feel like one thing God's been working on me for a while is, especially with my time, is how easy it is for me to be self-centered with my time and energy and go, I just need it for me. When I should be free to give away my time and energy. I mean, I taught about it a couple weekends ago, you know, in our weekend services, but part of that's talking to myself about the freedom to serve. So that idea that humility isn't just how I'm perceived, but it's how I prioritize my life.
Hmm. Yeah. I got no help for you there, Tim. But that's good. How about you, Aaron?
Yeah. I think it's been challenging for me. It's something I thought actually about a lot lately, and I'll be pretty vulnerable. Okay. I think for me, I'm learning how costly it is to pursue. When I ask God, Lord, would you help grow me in this? Would you help me learn to be more humble? That it's really, really costly. And that's embarrassing, honestly, for me to say out loud. But at the same time, I think I'm also experiencing and seeing, in a way I haven't yet before in my life, how incredibly freeing and life-giving it is for Jesus to walk me through this. But there is this tear, like just like what you're talking about, this like painful, like, oh man, my natural tendencies are pretty selfish.
Yeah.
So it's hard. But I don't have to stay in this like, man, this is really hard. That would be my go-to. Like, Jesus, I don't know if I can do this. This is really hard. I'll never get better. I'll just always be this way. Kind of like what you were talking about earlier, that kind of self. That would be like my go-to spaces, really raw with Jesus. But I'm seeing how even, yeah, like what you described earlier, the humility of like, but walking in life, no, I have the Spirit of God living in me. So right, where I'm not capable, I'm surrounded in a community that's going to encourage me in this. I've got a wonderful family. My spouse, like Chad, is amazing at helping me with, like, I have what I need to do this. And so I would say now, even I define true greatness as just what you said, like loving God more than I love everything else. That's true greatness to me now. But I'm just seeing how costly it is to get to that space, but how good it is when I'm letting Jesus walk me through that process. The cost is absolutely worth it, but it is costly.
Yeah.
Like I am having to transform the way that I think. Jesus is helping me transform the way that I think so that where I would naturally want to go, I'm learning to not go to, or I'm learning to continue to submit to, okay, you're going to have to help me with this, Jesus, because I want to do this, but I know this is what I need to do. I know I need to serve Chad in this way, or I need to, make a point to focus more on, like, I'm even thinking back to the question you just asked of like what it looks like to go into this week. I've been really challenged just simply with where I'm at right now. Just make time to think about it. Think about what this week is like. It's so easy for me to just do the stuff, right? Like life is busy. I know what I've got coming on Good Friday. I know what Easter looks like for me. And then I'm like, oh, and then I'll finally get to rest. But just to make the space to take time to sit with Jesus and just ask, hey, what would you want me to maybe think about today? Or let me just read something that may help me inspire something about you I want to think on today is a challenge for me that I'm trying to step into better this year. I'm just going to be more intentional about taking time to think, this is something that really happened. This is a real event. Jesus is a real person.
Yeah.
And I want to step into that and think about that and make it real. And I'm trying to find resources that will help me do that. I'm a very visual person, so there have been things I've accessed this year that have helped me do that a little bit better. But even that has cost me time that I want for myself. Cost me, like, I'd rather just go to bed. Like, I don't want to spend the next even 10 minutes committing to reading or thinking. Like, truly, it's just been costly. So I'm trying to step into that, trying to embrace that, but ultimately finding, man, I really will experience transformation when I enter into this. It's not that it's suddenly gotten easier, but that I'm hearing things from Jesus. I'm encouraged, and my community too has been such a big part of that. Can't express enough how valuable it is to not do this alone, but to invite people in so that they can even check in, or like even just Chad for me, like where I tell him, hey, I'm doing this. Will you just ask me sometimes how it's going?
Yeah.
And then it's encouraging for me because I can share things and I realize, oh, I almost couldn't even say that I learned something new until I just articulated it to you right now.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. This Tuesday, we're going to ask the question, and we reflected, the question we reflected on the weekend, we sat on for, you know, half a minute. It's not enough time to sit on the question, but to ask Jesus, and this isn't a question that I would say is a daily question, but it is a good check-in question. And if you've never asked Jesus a question like it, I think it is important to ask Jesus, what's one thing you want me to know about me? And to allow the Holy Spirit to bring to mind something there. And it is important that as you do that, that you would know, like, this is everything spiritual. There's a spiritual battle that's going on. Mm-hmm. And there can be your negative voices, maybe influenced by spiritual forces of darkness, but it just your negative view of you that can maybe creep into that moment and say something very harsh or negative. And that isn't the way God brings correction. It's not the way he kind of leads us. And so in the midst of all that you have going on in your world, if you're hearing things that are harsh and negative, that's probably not it. But if you're hearing things that maybe it's corrective, but it's done in a loving and shepherding kind of way, but also to be able to hear something that's positive.
Yeah.
And then being able to verbalize that. And this week it says, allow the truth of the response to shine through. That's true humility. That when I can say, Jesus, what's something you want me to know about me? And then I can admit that that thing is true. It doesn't mean I got to go out and tell everybody. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying, like, okay, allow him to drive a stake in my heart around that thing. Mm. Hey, this is something that you need to know about you. Even if it's like, what's something that I've done right? We're so good at asking questions. Hey, what have I done wrong? Hey, what's something I'm doing right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. So allow it to be something where you're like, okay, I've got some victory in my world. Mm-hmm. And I did this, I can't remember if I've shared on the podcast. I think I've shared on a weekend. We do listening exercises as part of the workshops that we do during Quiet Waters. And I'm doing a workshop and, hey, Jesus, what's something, basically same kind of question. And what's something you want, you like about me or love about me? And I was like, oh, wow, I should even do this. I'd done the exercise a bunch of times, but it was like, okay, maybe in this moment, I just felt this prompting like I should do it. And there was something that he brought to mind in that moment. And it was, David, I love the fact that you would go wherever I asked you to go, but I'm not asking you to go anywhere. And I wish I could tell everybody all the details around that thing as it has emerged over the last 8 years or something, 9 years, whatever, eight, 9 years, something. I wish I could tell everybody all the details to it, because that stake in the ground moment, it allowed me to stay grounded in what was true in the midst of maybe my emotions telling me other things, in the midst of my head, my thoughts. You know, often I say feeling or, you know, my emotions. I'm really talking about thoughts that run through my head. Yeah, just so clear. And in that, you know, my thoughts start running wild, and to be able to go back and more to that, you know, it's the something that it was a moment of clarity that allowed me to see something that I could go back to and say it wasn't a thing that I'm proud of or that I would brag about, but simply it was a mooring point to go, okay, that's a point I could look back to and say, if I hold on to that truth, when he says move, he knows I'll go.
Yeah.
So he's not going to just dangle stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's more than just that moment. It's you learn something about, I guess you learn something about your relationship with God, how the two of you relate to each other.
Yeah.
That then influences that relationship going forward. Yeah. That makes sense.
And I haven't had like 50 of those in the last 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, those are significant. I mean, the example is the exception, not the rule. But on any given Monday morning, I might need that. Mm-hmm. On any given Wednesday afternoon, I may need to go like, okay, wait, my mind is telling me something that isn't true. How do I go back to what is true?
Mm-hmm.
So with that, hey, this weekend, so I want to come back to it. Good Friday coming up. Worship pastor, what do we need to know about Good Friday? Anything we need to know as we look? Well, first off, why is it called Good Friday? Do you have the answer to this one? Okay.
I mean, I don't think
All right. Sorry. No was a good answer there. Yes or no?
I guess we don't look at ultimately. It's a really tough day, right? Like what happened on that day is pretty brutal, but it is actually really good news for us.
Yeah.
And that's hard to think about it that way or express it that way because it was a pretty terrible day. But again, hindsight, like we look back, right? And that's a very different experience for us as those who were there present in the moment too. But yeah, this is a really, really good news day for us that had to happen in a pretty terrible way. But ultimately, the greatest demonstration of love the world has and will ever know.
Yeah. So if we're thinking about coming to a worship experience on Good Friday, anything we need to know?
No. I mean, I think just come in. Humble is a great word for that space. Come in ready to just listen, receive. I mean, everything we want to do is connect our hearts and minds again, to the weight of it, and hopefully just continue to build a depth of relationship with Jesus, right? So I don't want to give too many things away, as I just want us to come in ready to meet with Jesus.
Very cool. Tim, Easter's coming up. We're just going to spring it. We're just going straight there. Sum this all up for us. Do you got a final word?
Sum it all up. Easter, will you?
Sum it all up. Humility, worship, service.
If you listen to this on Good Friday, it's Friday, but Sundays are coming. There you go.
Is that your final word?
There's a song for that, by the way.
There's a song for that.
There is.
Yeah.
Is that your final word?
That's all I
Friday's
got.
Friday's good, but Sunday's coming. That's the lyric.
Oh.
In the song.
Nice.
All right.
Nice. All right. Well, I guess that's the final word. Sunday's coming. See you next time.